Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the QS Cast. We have another vendor series for you all, so hope you enjoy that. Everyone's been really enjoying this series. We have Andrew, the general manager for Cape Fear Games. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is awesome. First time having you on. We're really, really excited to have you on the cast. Hopefully, we can have you back in the near future to kind of have a follow-up to this. We usually try to have as many a wide variety of vendors as we can. So we really appreciate you giving us the time.
Sure, I'd love to be back. A lot of people also don't know that we are owned by MTGO Traders Incorporated. So we have a broad reach both online and in paper. So I'm really glad to be here to talk
awesome.
About your games.
Yeah, no Tarkan today. So it's just going to be Andrew and I. And, with having a vendor on for the first time, we kind of have a really... we laid out kind of the flow for the podcast that we'll go through some questions, get a kind of inside look at Cape Fear Games operating, your operating structure, and some of your thoughts on the market. So let's just kind of dive right in. Let's tell us a little bit about Cape Fear Games, how they started, and your growth in this space, in this market, Andrew.
Sure. So we started about 8 years ago. Our anniversary is coming up November 1st. We're based in Wilmington, North Carolina. And the owner, Heath Newton, who owns MTGO Traders, called me up one day and said, let's open up a board game store. And so I moved down to the Cape Fear region, which is where we get our name from. And we opened up Cape Fear Games. It was a very small operation. And we grew, I think we've grown every year since. So 8 years of growth, and we learn a whole lot every year that we absolutely did not know the year before, and we don't know that we don't know that until we learn it. So it's been an incredible journey and a very eye-opening one, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, we've had other vendors on as well, so it's good to hear that this is like a learning experience and that every year you're looking to improve. I mean, that's really the kind of long and short of it, is that every year you kind of have to adapt and evolve, and it's kind of happened on this podcast, so it's over the course of this podcast, we've talked about many different topics. We've talked about, shifts in the market, how to kind of navigate through that. So it's really great to hear, even on a vendor level, that, that's kind of going on too, that, you have to kind of adapt and learn and kind of keep going each year to stay successful.
Absolutely. Even if you do know a lot about your job or a lot about the market or whatever you do, if you aren't continuing to educate yourself and learn and improve, then you are going to get stuck in your ways and the world will pass you by. And eventually you'll become not efficient at your job and not know what's going on.
Is there one that kind of, is there a part of your model that sticks out to you that, after a while just wasn't working anymore in this market? Do you have one in particular? Because, I mean, we talked a lot about, we made a huge shift, Tarkan and I. We still talk about, holding specific cards or, we have considerations that we, gauge as more of a long-term prospect. But mostly we've shifted to a lot of turn and burn kind of strategy where we don't want to be really holding on to a lot of things super long. And it reflects in our podcast infographics that, me in particular, I'll be much less successful over the long term, but a lot more successful in the short term. So is there any one thing that kind of sticks out to you that you remember that, hey, we kind of have to kind of change what we're doing here?
Not necessarily one thing. I mean, as a business, it's completely different than as an investor. In a business, I think the opportunity of cash being held in investments is a super real thing. If you're not constantly selling the cards you're buying, they could increase in value, but there's also the risk that they could decrease in value. So when you're buying absolutely everything across all of Magic, you really just need to have the sales match your buys. So I think it's a little bit different than an individual investor who might buy 20 copies of one card. you know, we're trying to buy 20 copies of all cards at all times. And so it's really tough in that regard to kind of try to sit and hold on a price. Market price varies, and we have a better out than most people who have to use buy lists, but that's also, you know, the name of the game. We take on a lot more risk in terms of having to buy all the cards and not just be able to pick and choose. I think this one's going to really be good. Yeah, we can increase the buy price a little bit on that one, but overall, it's, you know, you're stuck buying everything if you want to be a Magic store and have inventory.
We have actually a question already from Jeremy. He's the host of one of the hosts of Cartel Aristocrats, another finance podcast. So I appreciate the question, Jeremy. Thanks for listening in. But how hard is it to manage your cash flow?
Thank you for listening, Jeremy, and thank you for the question. Cash flow is the toughest part about having a business is, you know, if you want to have a good quarter four, you got to have cash flow because that's where a lot of sales are going to come. We found that actually Magic singles dip in the fourth quarter, but cash flow that's one of the most difficult parts of my job is making sure that the business has enough cash to make the purchases for whenever buys or come in. You know, you could have weeks where you have several people submitting several thousand dollars in cards, and you know, you also want to buy a gigantic order of board games and miniatures, and we also carry disc golf, and so you really need to have the money coming in to have the money going out. Without that, you're not really a business. You're just kind of a buy and hold type operation, and you know, that's gonna get eaten with all of your payroll and all of your expenses and overhead. So it's really just that's the name of the game is cash flow.
Great questions, Jeremy. Thanks. So I guess we kind of talked a little bit about we kind of started to get into the operational structure. Maybe just want to talk about a little bit about policies, procedures, you know, card grading, you know, just to kind of give more of an identity to the listeners of Cape Fear.
Sure. So as a general manager, I actually am a lot more removed away from Magic pricing and buying Magic cards.
Okay.
I have 3 full-time buyers on staff. We operate with about 20 employees at the moment. Our only operation is Cape Fear Games in terms of the retail store. We're owned by MTGO Traders. That's a whole other business in terms of I don't really touch it at all. We do have the opportunity to have the free flow of cards coming into us and then credit going out to traders and vice versa. You can sell your online cards and get store credit so you can buy paper cards. But in terms of policy and procedures of cards specifically at Cape Fear Games, we've kind of been driven a lot by how TCG Player grades the cards. That's one of our big outlets for cards, that and Amazon, eBay, our own website, in person at conventions or Grand Prix, that sort of thing. So our grading has to kind of match and mimic those outlets that we sell it at. TCG Player can be kind of wild in terms of their grading, both both on individual sellers basis and then also their TCG Player direct. So it's kind of like a near mint, basically means mint to them. Got a couple nicks. It goes down to light play. So it's light play became a much larger area. The gray area between light play and moderate is just so vague for them. So we kind of have to match that. But we, you know, given the choice, we just unfortunately have to downgrade. You know, we may give someone a light play price and then grade it as moderate so that we sell it as moderate. And I'd rather lose a couple of percentage points there than have an unhappy customer.
That is definitely fair. So kind of shifting gears here, how is it being a large vendor in this current market? Do you find it becoming more difficult? I mean, we talked a little bit about you guys kind of have to change kind of your procedures here and kind of always improving and a learning experience. So do you find it's becoming more difficult, par for the course? How is it? Is there kind of a huge disparity between online and then owning kind of an LGS?
Yes, there's a lot there. First of all, I would love to know what you define as a large vendor. I mean, having started the business back in 2009, I would not classify us as a large vendor, but maybe we are. I don't know that we've been in the 25 in terms of largest Magic holdings in the vendor space, but I certainly like to think we can compete with them, especially with customer service. But in terms of the current market, yeah, it's difficult. The pricing really becomes tough. Like when a new set comes out, it doesn't just affect that set because most of the reprints will just hammer all the other ones, and that may affect cards that play along with those reprints. So some of those could go up or down. But I mean, you're starting to have to price hundreds or thousands of cards a couple times a day instead of just a couple hundred cards. So it's really, that's the most difficult part is all of the reprints coming out and affecting pricing. we just got back from GPDC. Well, I guess it's been a while for GPDC, but we felt like a lot of the cards that we bought there just got all reprinted in Iconic Masters. So,
yeah,
you know, you take the hits there, and that's why you have a buy list price and a retail price. That's just kind of how retail works. And you take the hits there and you make the margin on the other cards that you sell. But in terms of running an LGS, I'm absolutely proud of our LGS here. We've invested a ton of money into the space itself. It's beautiful, well lit. We have clean bathrooms, wonderful community. So we really try to focus on that. And I think that's kind of the at the core of our store. I think if that ever went away, we may cease to exist as a business. Just as a core of our belief is that we should have that LGS here and have that community base. That's kind of why we started. We didn't start to sell Magic cards online. So the LGS is absolutely our priority. Selling online is we get more knowledgeable about it, so I don't think that it becomes harder each year. We just have to learn how to adapt and conform and twist and figure out how to make it work. So I think we're learning. I would love to be considered a large vendor, and but also keep that small vendor customer service that we have been established on.
That's great to hear. I mean, I've been playing the game a long time. I've gone to a lot of stores. It's kind of really fascinating. To me, it just feels so little that needs to be put in to really kind of cultivate a great community and have a great store. I mean, you just don't, it's like crazy to me sometimes how some stores just drop the ball on what I would feel is very basic things. I mean, brought up like, I don't know, you like kind of brought this thought to my mind when you said like clean bathrooms. It's like, it's just the little idea, things. Right? I know it's insane, but it really I mean, certain little things that are done in certain stores really kind of bring a lot of people together and cultivate a great community. And I've been to so many stores and it's like, I scratch my head sometimes and I'm like, how is this store still here? Yeah, how is the store not like gone by now? With the, you know, when, you know, you don't even get as much as a hello, you know, that you get like store owners, and I'm not trying to name any specific ones, but you just get some of these store owners that seem very detached. You get staff that seems very detached, and it's just like, you know, not a very good space. And it's like, how are these people still around?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that the owner harps on. He said he walked into another game store one time and the cashier was playing WoW and just never acknowledged for about 20 minutes. He ended up just walking out. He wanted to buy a couple of games, but you know, if you're not even going to acknowledge someone when they come in, it's, I don't know why you're there.
I mean, I don't want to name names, but I mean, I've even been in these, you know, you kind of mentioned you don't feel like you're a bigger vendor, but, you know, you're pretty well known. And, you know, I would go into one of these larger, I guess, more well-known large vendors stores. And it's just like, it feels like I'm impeding on their time to get, you know, service. So it's like, it really does go a long way. So it's great to know that so much has gone into Cape Fear Games. Like you said just now, that you put a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of investment into it. And it all comes full circle when, you know, you have, you're harping on kind of these basic things.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I came from a lot of waiting tables and customer service in my former jobs. And the atmosphere we have, we're not a sales driven staff. I don't even care if anybody spends money when they come in the store. I just want them to have a good time. We keep it family friendly. You know, if they come in and play games, they're growing the community. Someone else will spend money. I don't, you know, we have the Magic cards online to sell, but I just want the area around Wilmington just to have a great store to go play in and be safe. And
So this is kind of a larger question here, but what are your thoughts on Magic and finance? Like, from a vendor's perspective, you know, making money on Magic and Magic as an investment. You know, for someone like me and a lot of these, you know, we're kind of these investors, quote unquote, kind of this middle ground. We're not huge vendors. We don't own LGSs. We have a different take. So we like to get vendors' perspective on this because there's a lot of different, it really, I guess, depends on your goals. So we have a lot of different takes on this question here.
Sure. So I'll kind of get a little brief thought from Cape Fear Games' perspective, and then I'll just tell you my perspective, which is it's probably in line with it, but also I talk a little bit more freely there. In terms of Cape Fear Games, we're just, you know, we're a store. It's not necessarily a investment opportunity. We are looking to buy cards and sell them for more money, or sell enough volume that the average of what we sell is for more than we pay for it. And that's basically it at the end of the day. We like to stay up on the know and provide a fair enough price. You know, if we're paying 70% on a on a card and versus what we sell at. And after you count out the fees from TCG Player or eBay, or even the 25% store credit bonus, like there's not a lot of margin there. But it's, you know, it's also a service. Like you can get the cards you want at when you need them. Back when Scry was your magazine, you had to go around and trade with your friends
at
the tournament. Like it was, it's amazing how far we've come. So, you know, we're not just a store. We do provide that service to the community. And people, I think, are solving Magic so much faster now with the internet and with the availability of cards. There's also a ton more cards being printed. I'm not sure what the numbers are. Wizards doesn't list them, but they have to be printing way more each set than the set before that. So it's just without the different rarities, like commons, uncommons, at some point they just become worthless just because of the volume printed. There's so many out there. And then on the personal side, you know, if you're investing in like say 93, 94 cards, which is a whole nother story, or like Power Nine, then maybe you're an investor. Otherwise, I would probably classify you closer to a trader if you're going to be, you know, looking to get rid of those cards in the short term of less than a year. If you're, you know, buying and holding, that's when I think you become an investor. But if you're going to buy to flip, then and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that's, I think, looking to get it out, and you have to know what the out is. Are you going to be selling that on yourself and dealing with that? Are you going to look to trade it? I mean, that takes time too, and people need to factor that in as well. But in terms of making money on Magic, I don't think there's a problem with it, as long as you're you know, providing that service. And the more people that do it, the more arbitrage that gets out of the market, then, you know, those buy and sell prices kind of come closer together in equilibrium. So the more people that get into it, maybe the less money there is to be made, until possibly when tournaments happen or cards spike, that's when you're really going to need to see the quick action of get in, get out. I think that's where you can make your money.
Yeah, you're not the first vendor to say that. You know, you use the term equilibrium here. A lot of the vendors that we've had on the cast kind of said it's kind of this mutually beneficial kind of thing, that the more people there are out there, I mean, yes, there's a lot more vendors and just individual traders, I guess we'll use the term. But ultimately, I mean, that kind of needs to happen, right? I mean, it's a kind of a symbiotic relationship there.
Yeah, and with the more traders, more stores, the more people are, you know, I absolutely love Magic. I'm not a competitive player by any means, but must have taught more than 1,000 people in my lifetime. And if everyone teaches a couple of people, like, Magic is absolutely growing. So, you know, you are going to have people and they're going to be coming into the game and have that whole discovery that I've had the past 20 years, that they're going to just starting now to see that. And who knows, maybe they'll be a trader or buyer and seller down the road, but they have that whole journey to go, and it may be quick over a couple of years, or it may take them 20 years to see. So I don't think that it's necessarily going to I don't think the secondary market's in trouble at all. I think we have a lot more new people coming into the game. Kind of makes it self-sustaining.
Yeah, and you know, so many people kind of look at, I guess, this area of the game in a very negative light when, you know, all these cards are spiking, and who's, like, you know, these buyouts and all these spooky, like, bad people in the background. But I mean, you don't realize, I mean, a lot of, especially yourself, I mean, there's a whole kind of tier to this side of the game, that, you know, a lot of people do so many other things than just, you know, buy out cards. I mean, that's not really the end goal. I mean, you have so many people that are, like you said, providing a service. I mean, there's so much more that goes into it than, you know, people just don't want to look at, you know, what goes behind it than just, all these cards are increasing. Well, that's been happening since I've started playing the game. I mean, we've had $25 cards before. We've had spirit mongers that are, you know, nowhere to be found and are $30, and, you know, you can't find them, you know, in the Tri-County area. So, I mean, it's been a long process, but it hasn't really changed. The information is definitely a lot quicker. We have better tools, but ultimately, you know, when the game's popular, that kind of happens. It comes with the territory.
Absolutely. I like to kind of call it Magic finance and community. So a lot of people that are real into the know and are trying to flip cards and making money off it, I think that's actually a very small group when you look at the whole community of Magic. You know, when I see people come in and playing in a tournament and they've just been working 60 hours a week at a job that has nothing to do with games, they're just coming in to play. They don't care what the cards cost. You know, if that one does something cool, great. If they have the money to afford it, great. But they're really just coming to have a good time and hang out with their friends. Like, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. And you know, the traders will help make that market reach equilibrium, where it's kind of an even keel. It's not going to have those huge pops or huge drops. So, I mean, obviously bans and restricted announcements will change that. But for the most part, we're going to start seeing like an actual market rate rather than different prices on different sites.
Yeah. So you alluded to this a little bit, but what do you think about Wizards of the Coast kind of more aggressive reprint policy? Is it just kind of business as usual? I mean, you talked about, you know, you kind of took a kind of big hit there for cards from a GP that basically just turn around, get reprinted in Iconic Masters. There really isn't any threat to the secondary market. I think you said that already, but you know, how do you kind of navigate that from a vendor perspective?
Yeah, I mean, they said they don't care about the secondary market. They're not trying to change it or affect it or whatever. Obviously, every action they do does affect it, and possibly in a big way. But I don't think they're going to make the decisions that will ultimately kill the secondary market. That's not in their best long-term interest either. So really, we just take information, see what it's going to do, analyze it, and how we can correct course. Because as long as we're adjusting and adapting, then eventually we'll be fine as well. Yeah, it sucks to have reprints, but you know what? That keeps the prices of cards lower and maybe people get into the game. So that may be better for the long-term health of the game. So I don't really have a thought on it one way or the other. I mean, they're going to reprint, let them reprint it. And we will not put as much stock in cards that could possibly be reprinted. You know, we try to get rid of those or lower the prices to get them blown out before these reprints happen. But yeah, I mean, they're making what, like 6 to 10 sets a year now. It's just absolutely crazy how many cards are getting pumped out each year now. You know, some of those are smaller box sets or whatever, but you know, you put a couple large high dollar reprints in there and it may sell the product or may just kill the value of the card in one way or the other. So we don't really have a stance on their aggressive reprint policy. We just look to see what it is and adapt and try to find what's the best course of action for Cape Fear Games and the community going forward.
So you talked about this also. You kind of feel like Magic is thriving on both a vendor and then just a personal level. I mean, we have a lot of things to kind of, I mean, you talked about it. There's a lot more cards being printed. There's a lot more sets being printed. We also have Magic Arena on the horizon. So it definitely feels like everything is trending upward. I mean, I feel like Magic has been thriving. I don't think we've had a vendor on here that said it isn't, but everything kind of feels like it's pointing in the right direction. Do you feel that Magic Arena would be a huge boon to Magic in general?
I'll get to that. In terms of thriving, I think it is trending upward. I'm not sure what metrics are using to do that. I'm not sure that Standard is necessarily trending upward.
Sure.
It's their bread and butter. But man, if they did not have Commander, I think Magic may be in trouble. But I think Commander is carrying Magic right now. You also have Modern that seems to be hanging around and doing really well. I think Legacy's taken a big hit, even though all the prices of cards don't seem to care. You know, as they go up, I think that hurts Legacy even more in terms of the number of people who are.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't think Wizards cares about Legacy. They may just continue on with Modern and maybe a new format that they haven't come up with yet. But Commander is so much fun. Cube is so much fun. I mean, there's a format for everyone. That's the kind of the important thing. And I think as they keep printing fun cards like Dinosaurs and Pirates and, you know, go over to something completely different, that it's going to capture the people that have that interest. And you can build a Werewolf Pirate deck and play that to your heart's content. So I think they're really catering to the casual player. And I think that's also their largest customer base. As far as Magic Arena, the MTG Arena, you know, I haven't played Hearthstone, but boy, does it look a lot like Hearthstone.
And sure does.
I would just get, I think, Magic more exposure. There may be a mass exodus from Magic Online. But I think at the end of the day, most people are going to be playing both instead of leaving one for the other. Again, also just depends upon people's time and how much time they're able and willing to devote to the game or other games that are coming out that are non-Magic. So I think for Magic players, Magic is thriving. And as long as they continue to add new players to it, then they'll be doing well.
So Ixalan just released. Do you have in front of you or know offhand some of the best sellers from this set?
I don't,
just so we can okay,
I can try to,
I mean, it's it. Fine. I mean, we like to kind of just get a pulse on what's been selling on your end, or is there maybe just top five? It doesn't even have to be Ixalan.
Lately the Masterpieces and Expeditions have just been
okay,
blowing out. And I think, you know, a lot of that is, hey, we're not gonna just reprint all of these. There is a possibility you could collect them all if you start now. Like that's been selling a lot. I'm sure Ixalan has been doing well. It's not really something I have to deal with in my day-to-day. I'm more in you know, payroll and managing staff and having other people get there. But I don't know anything specific from Ixalan. That's I think as a whole it's been doing pretty well though.
So when you talk about masterpieces, that were just the Kaladesh and the BFZ ones, or just even the invocations?
I lump them all together. Invocations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're all in the same boat, and they've all been selling really well. The Expeditions, I think, picked up after GPDC. We weren't a ton before that, but boy, when we came back, they've just been flying out.
Yeah, it definitely feels like there's more. Been a lot more movement on those.
Yeah, it also feels like since there's no Masterpiece or Hunt in the Ixalan set, that the average, you know, there's a lot higher average price of card. You don't have like the really high Masterpiece card, and then everything else has to be lower to compensate for that. So, but we've been moving product. It's not like the Ixalan has just been sitting there.
And that comes with Miwei, you said, you know, when you print dinosaurs and pirates, I mean, that kind of attracts a lot of different players to a set like Ixalan.
Yeah, absolutely. You add in vampires and merfolk. And,
they definitely feel, I mean, I mentioned this on my other cast, but it definitely feels like the last three set, they've really hit their stride in terms of design. I mean, I know Amonkhet had invocations and kind of drove down the price of a lot of cards, but that doesn't really seem indicative of where they are now in terms of their set design. And I think Kaladesh wasn't around,
they really hit the flavor on that
Do you have any kind of cards that you're eyeing or cards that you're setting aside personally?
Well, I played in the old system, so any 93 94 cards I can get my hands on,
If
I had time, I would probably sell them, just because they're absolutely ridiculous in price. Actually going out and buying them. In terms of the store, I'm sure we're looking at cards that are you know, at the rotation and could see modern play. Like, that's kind of where you want to be. And then, you know, commander cards, you could pick some of those up, and later down the road they'd be gems. But now everyone's kind of identifying them as commander cards, and they don't really lose a lot of their value when we head into rotation. So there's some cards we're looking to focus on, but it's at the end of the day, we're buying all cards and selling all cards and trying to make that process work instead of buying one or two and holding them.
Fair. Now, I don't remember. I've used Cape Fear. You talk about Commander a lot. That's kind of, is that one of the more successful areas? I mean, you have a lot of customers coming in for that. Do you have a huge foil inventory, or has that been hard to keep in stock? Especially, I mean, talk about Ixalan. We've had like Gisanth, we've had Admiral Beckett Brass, where, you know, those are pretty well-known commander cards at this point, and generals. Is it hard to keep foils of those particular cards in stock? Is there anything else that you would like to keep in stock in that realm?
Foils themselves, like, we don't obviously see as many of those as we do the non-foils. Okay. But I also look to aggressively price those to move them, because that's where you can also lose a lot of your money. Like, if cards just go out of favor, those just trend downward so fast. So I like to get rid of those, but their sales are strong on those foils. So I'm not really sure, whether that's because we don't have as many, or because we sell it more, or we can't buy it. We don't open any more Ixalan product after release day. So, we're not sitting there busting foils. It's just whatever people want to sell it to us. So, but I'm not trying to aggressively buy a bunch of foils and then either tank or not be able to sell them. But in terms of our community locally, like, we opened up Commander FNMs, and now we're getting like 35, 40 people for Commander FNMs. It's dwarfing our standard numbers now. So we see Commander players in the store 7 days a week. So it's just,
wow.
That I think is the largest community around us anyway.
So I did want to open it up to anyone who's listening to open up and ask questions. This would be the time, because we have like one more topic, but okay. pretty shy. All right. What is your dream of owning a shop? Ooh.
Well, unfortunately, I don't own any of it. So I am a 0% owner. I am just a general manager, but I want to have a product that I can be proud of. And I think so far I'm extremely proud of what Cape Fear Games has done. Dreams of the shop. I mean, it's just to grow and have the community be the focal point. I think we're doing that.
Is this something you see yourself doing to retirement, until retirement?
That's a good question. I'm in my early 30s, so we shall see. Hopefully have a long life ahead of me, and I am learning so much about business. we will see. I'm not sure what my exit strategy is. I have a 2-year-old, so another one on the way. So having a steady income is certainly the dream. I get to play with games and Magic all day. So
good questions. Those are actually pretty good questions. Come on, Efren. Give us a question.
What was the shipping question you had?
Oh, no. Okay. It's apparently it's a new joke that goes on in this community that we have a bunch of jokesters that all like to
I would never imagine in the Magic
pile on to someone asking a shipping question, apparently. So it was a will you free Morgan? So Andrew has no idea what that is, but pretty sure I addressed this like a few times now.
He's probably talking about my favorite actor. I love Morgan Freeman. The Shawshank Redemption was incredible.
So there you go.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, yeah, it's these folks are
I can also accept any questions about Paw Patrol or Daniel Tiger if you're into any cartoons for two-year-olds.
See, this is, I mean, this is great. Probably I mean, it's we go from vendor cast to, you know, children's programming and everything in between.
Excellent. Way too many hours of Daniel Tiger are watched in a week. I'm trying to limit that to a lot less. But, man, is he educational.
Jeremy, stop by your booth.
The remake of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It's on PPN.
Oh,
it's the animated version. Newer. They even use some of the older clips of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Wow. They just
P3K stuff. What's your question about that? Thanks for stopping by. I'm glad. Hopefully, it was in the light. I know we had a little power outage at DC.
Yeah. Was it on display because it doesn't sell normally online?
I'm not sure what. It depends. Like, we have a ding and dent section that doesn't sell really well because a lot of people want to see what the damage is. So we take a lot of our beat up stuff to shows and just really aggressively price them to move them. So maybe that's what he's referring to. That's another part. See, I don't think we're that big of a vendor because we don't have a show stock. We don't do that many shows a year. So we have to take and order all the stuff that we want to sell at the show and then pull it and then price it, organize it, set it up. When we come back, we have to put it all back in the inventory. So I think when we do enough shows, we have a separate inventory. That's when we'll consider ourselves a larger vendor. But we'll be at GP Atlanta as well. If you guys want to stop by the booth, I'll be down there. That's November 10th through 12th. And then if you're closer in North Carolina, the week before, we'll be at regionals for one day at Atomic Empire in Durham. And that's on Saturday, November 4th.
All right. Kind of last thing here. What's kind of the best way, you know, you have your buy list, I'm not sure you're on Trader Tools, so many folks may not know how to kind of ship cards to you. What's kind of, everything is set up on there?
Yeah, so we have two main sites. We have CapeFearGames.com. Our buy list is just CapeFearGames.com/buy list. There's all kinds of information there, but you submit a buy list just like you're ordering cards, you know, you get a cart, and once you do that, we send you an email with an approval and put the cards in order and you send it to us. Then we grade it and get you paid in whatever method you want. If you're looking for Magic Online credit, our parent company, mtgotraders.com, I think they're one of the largest vendors online, but you get a 20% bonus to order cards off there, and that gift certificate never expires. If you need to transfer it back, we can transfer it back to Cape for Games and do a little math for you. But because we do a 25% bonus games, we just can't make the margins work on traders to do a 25% bonus there. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, or you can sell your Magic Online collection. You can download a CSV of what you want to sell, submit it through the mtgotraders.com website, and we'll get you a quote. And if you want Cape Fear Games credit, we add some bonus there, and you get some paper cards. It's very easy to go back and forth between paper and digital.
Sounds good. Before we wrap things up, we're kind of getting to that time. Really good question to kind of end it off. On a scale of negative 10 to 10, how much fun is it to wake up every day and stare at Magic cards?
I would give this probably a 10 because I used to be an actor. I've been doing that since I was about 3. So I lived up in New York and lived out in L.A. And when I was in New York, I worked at a bank and I was scanning documents on like 5 turbo scanners all day. I made enough money there that I only had to work 3 days a week. Man, walking into the store and seeing Magic cards or board games. I love board games, too. There's nothing that compares to that versus having to see a bunch of confidential documents you can't talk to anybody about. The file. That talk about soul sucking. That was
seems pretty brutal. I'm sorry.
I'll give it a 10.
New York is a grind in and of itself. So
yeah, that's absolutely true.
Oh man, just putting in all those hours just to literally you're like gasping above water, like you're just treading water at that point. It was really tough.
Absolutely, yeah. You're just trying to make your subway pass and your rent.
My God, the cost of loan for travel up there is insane.
Yeah, but it is nice to be able to wake up at 3 a.m. and go get Indian.
Yeah, food, yeah.
You can't
yeah.
So
I mean, apparently you can do that everywhere now with like Uber Eats and all this crazy stuff. So it's like, what am I doing?
Everywhere for Wilmington.
Yeah, that's true.
Things just shut down here.
All right. So Andrew, this has been really a delight. Thank you again for coming on. Where can they find you, even on just a professional and a personal level? I think a lot of people would love to know how to get a hold of you.
I'm not on Magic Online a lot, but my screen name there is Basic Land. You can find me on Twitter at Basic Land. Find Cape Fear Games at Cape Fear Games and Traders at MTGO Traders. We're on Facebook. If you're interested, I run a board game convention called Board Games April. Come on down and play. CapeFearGames.com, MTGOTraders.com. Your emails are on there. If you have any other questions, feel free to hit me up.
Awesome. Yeah, at Chaz V. Yeah, no problem. We're going to do this again very soon. You've been a great, great guest. Thank you for your insights and thanks for, you know, giving us a look into Cape Fear Games.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Yeah. Best ways to find me at Chaz VMTG on Twitter. The QS Insider Discord is pretty much where I'm at most of the time. If you want to hear me another more times a week on a podcast, check out the MTG Goldfish podcast and find my work on QS on the insider side or on the non-insider side. I pretty much do it all. Andrew, thanks again. We will do this soon.
All right, great. Take care.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.